This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. It is Minnesota Law Sunday edition. Steve Thompson along with our host, Tom Shore. Tom, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Steve. It's really fun to be with this new audience on Sunday afternoon.
And we had a great program, week number one on Sunday, and we have another great program today, week number two.
Exactly right. We're welcoming back to our show Jana Aune-Deitch, who has been on our program before, but this is her first time with yours truly. So welcome, Jana.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Steve, as you know from her prior appearances, Jana is a shareholder with Moss and Barnett, who is a practitioner in our family law practice group, where she practices exclusively in the area of family law. And in that regard, Jana has achieved great recognition from her peers. She's been recognized as a super lawyer by a vote, anonymous vote of Minnesota lawyers. Congratulations, Jana.
Thank you very much. It's quite an honor.
It is indeed, and we're very, very proud of you. And also, I might add that you are now writing a chapter in a prominent book with one of Hennepin County's judges.
Yes, I am. I'm very excited to be co-authoring an article or a chapter of the Family Law Financial Desk book regarding the disproportionate division of marital assets.
Well, it sounds like it's very interesting and will be very helpful to not only the judges, but also the attorneys who practice in family law.
We hope it will be very informative and educational.
As we talk about our program today, it's Family Law 101, and really it's covering family law from soup to nuts. And we're going to ask from the perspective of a new client, perhaps, what is it that family law is all about and how does a family law matter proceed? But I thought it would be interesting in the meantime, or first of all, just to talk about the collegiality that exists among the judges and the attorneys and the experts and consultants who work in the family law area. And it's really quite a unique thing here in Minnesota. People think of how family law attorneys in particular are ripping each other's throats and tongues out, not to mention other body parts, but that's not true, is it?
That's not true, and I think collegiality is the perfect word to use. It really is an effort among the family law practitioners, the judges, and the various experts that we work with to really work to help a family who is going through a divorce process to try to make sure this family can emerge in a way that is the best for them, that they remain as whole as they can possibly be, and to minimize the litigation and the adversarial process to make this a more team effort to try to work for this family.
I understand that you're just back from something called Divorce Camp up in the Brainerd Lakes area, where all of these folks, judges, lawyers, and experts, came together to talk about these issues.
Yes, I did. Divorce Camp is an annual conference that is sponsored by the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, the Minnesota chapter. And it is, as you said, judges, attorneys, the various financial experts, our child psychologists, the people who work with us on our parenting time and custody issues. And the entire conference is geared around how do we take the adversarial process and make this something that can be used in a format and a process to help families through a dissolution proceeding and to make sure that we are taking care of the entire family and that we can achieve the best results for everyone, specifically the children.
Right. And I know that here at Moss and Barnett, our group of family law attorneys is really quite pro-family and pro-marriage.
Yes, we are.
And so in that regard, Divorce Camp is really another outreach effort and shared by the bar that practices family law in this state. So congratulations to you and our thanks to all of you who participate.
It's a wonderful conference, and it's something I enjoy doing every year.
I think for our listeners to become acquainted with family law would be to mention something that I'm always struck by whenever I work with you or have one of our family law attorneys on the program, and that is the tremendous variety and breadth of topics that you cover. You really have to know all areas of the law, essentially.
We really do. We touch on a lot of different areas of law that may not always be expected, such as business valuations. We have to deal with tax issues. We have to deal with a lot of real estate transactions. And so not only do we need to be proficient in our own family law laws, but to also expand and get into other areas of law as well.
I imagine in that regard it is useful, if not very, very helpful, and especially beneficial for the clients that you're practicing with a full-service business law firm with Moss & Barnett.
Absolutely. We regularly meet with and call on the assistance of our various attorneys at Moss & Barnett to help us with the various issues we have to deal with in a case. I regularly consult with our tax attorneys, our real estate attorneys, our business attorneys, and they are extremely helpful in helping us to work through some of these issues that are facing our divorce clients.
I imagine that sort of seamless consultation is not only effective, but also cost-effective for clients.
Absolutely. It's so much more helpful for a client to be able to use one law firm to be able to get questions answered regarding their dissolution proceeding, to know that if they come to meet with me, we can easily call in another attorney from a different practice area to help answer the questions that we have when we are trying to work through issues that we're preparing for a hearing or a mediation or other type of meeting.
All right. We're going to be talking throughout the program about the various types of issues that arise in family law, but it's a lot more than just going to court and getting a marriage decree that a marriage has been dissolved.
You are correct. Family law touches on a wide variety of subjects. We not only do we deal with divorce, but we also deal with paternity actions. So if two people have had a child and they are not married, we have a lot of issues that come up with custody and parenting time issues in addition to child support issues.
All right. We'll cover those and many other topics here as we continue with our presentation of Family Law 101.
All right. It is Minnesota Law, by the way. This show and other shows are available online, laws-barnett.com. Jana Ani Deitch in studio. Tom Schroyer is our host, Family Law 101. It is Minnesota Law, Sunday edition here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss & Barnett attorney Clifford A. Taney Jr. went on to fame while serving during World War II as general counsel to the super-secret nuclear development program of the U.S. Army, known as the Manhattan Project?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss & Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Traffic and weather together, mornings and afternoons, on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, Sunday edition. When we have a football conflict on Saturdays, you're able to hear Minnesota Law on Sundays between 1 and 2 o'clock. You're on News Radio 830 WCCO. Family Law 101 in the spotlight today. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jana Ani Deitch in studio as well. Tom?
Thanks so much, Steve. We're back with Jana Ani Deitch talking about family law in an overview. And, of course, we've had many, many of our compatriots at Moss & Barnett's Family Law Practice Area on the show to talk specifically about really quite a few of these topics. It is just amazing to me the gamut that you folks run in family law with regard to different aspects of life in general, not just the divorce of or the dissolution of a marriage. For example, you get actively into custodial and child support issues.
Exactly. A lot of times we are dealing with determining custody and parenting time issues specifically between two parents and determining what the schedule should be for mom and for dad. And along those lines, what usually follows with that is our child support and our spousal maintenance issues. And so we are looking at making sure that both sets of parents, both parents and the children, have money flowing to be able to meet needs. So we have to look at a lot of cash flow issues, budget issues. We also have to look at division of marital assets. Does somebody have a non-marital claim? Did somebody come into the marriage with assets, property? How do we carve that out? How do we look at this fairly and coming up with a fair division and an equitable division of the marital assets?
And Jana, on previous shows, you brought up how concerned the courts are about the children, that that is really job one when it comes to a divorce, when children are involved.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. The court is charged with making determinations of custody and parenting time, which are in the best interest of the children. And there are several factors that go into the court's analysis to be able to determine what is best for these kids as far as time with each of the parents and if there's any special needs that we need to address.
Now, is our child support and child custody issues, are they the most contentious or intractable issues that you deal with?
Well, they certainly can be, but getting into the financial aspects can certainly be as contested as a custody matter as well. When you come to the financial piece of it, people can, you know, it can get very scary for people because both sides want to know that they're going to be taken care of, they're going to be able to continue to pay their bills and live just as they always have. And so sometimes those fights can actually be even more contentious and more litigated than a custody matter.
You know, I've always heard, or I've heard in recent years anyway, that in Minnesota, basically, the courts just split the marital assets, that is, the assets that were developed during the marriage, right down the middle, 50-50. Is that true?
That is not necessarily true. Our statute by the legislature requires that the court make a fair and equitable division of the assets. That does not necessarily mean an equal division of the assets or a 50-50 division. They have to look at what's fair, and in some cases, depending on the factors and the facts that are in a specific divorce, it might be fair for the court to give one party more than 50% of the assets for a wide variety of reasons.
Do they ever award less than 50-50?
Sometimes they do.
All right. And of course, I suppose the judges have to look at where property came from to determine if it's the product of a marriage or perhaps an inheritance or a gift, and then tracing all of that and it's how it's multiplied and grown over the years must oftentimes be very challenging.
Exactly. Sometimes, especially if you've got a long-term marriage, 25, 30 years, and you have one spouse who has some significant non-marital claims, it can be very detailed, very complicated to trace those non-marital claims to be able to determine what the asset was at the time they brought it into the marriage and what it looks like now today when the divorce is proceeding.
Well, another issue that I'm sure you still wrestle with is what I used to call, or I know people called, alimony. It's now what, spousal maintenance?
Spousal maintenance, that's correct.
All right, well, I'll try to get the vernacular down here. And but in terms of spousal maintenance, are there any benchmarks or rules of thumb that the courts use in terms of what is measured out?
There is not, and sometimes we wish there were. The court really has to look at each family and apply the facts as set forth by the legislature regarding a wide variety of issues, including the length of the marriage, if somebody has a health issue, what are the assets that are going to be divided between these parties, what is one person's ability to become self-supporting. So each family is really unique in the eyes of the law and in the courts, and the court has to look at that specific family and look at the facts of that specific family to be able to make a determination regarding an amount and how long the award of maintenance will last.
Yeah. Now, I've always understood that at the age of 18, children were emancipated. Will the courts require a parent, especially one who's prominent or successful financially, to pay for the needs of that child after they're 18 for any particular purpose?
Only if the child has some special needs. If there is a child that has some disabilities, the court can order support to go beyond the term of emancipation, so either 18 or when they graduate from high school. But for most children, it will end either when they turn 18 or graduate from high school, whichever is later, and the court really cannot require a parent to do anything more than that. It has to be voluntarily agreed to.
I want to touch briefly after our break coming up here with you on all of the different kinds of visitation and custody issues that you're now wrestling with due to the what I might call the complexification of our society.
That's a very good word.
All right, we have much more on the way. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jana Onedich is in studio as well. Family Law 101. By the way, more info on all our programs available online, moss-burnett.com. Once again, we're coming your way on Sunday because of a football game on Saturday, and we'll do that throughout the autumn here on Minnesota Law. Once again, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio, 830-WCCO.
News Radio 830 WCCO. Streaming online right now at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Law Sunday Edition here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Normally on Saturdays, noon to 1, but during football season, many times we're on Sundays between 1 and 2 o'clock. And we appreciate you joining us. Tom Schroyer, our host, Jana Unadich, in studio, Family Law 101. Tom?
Steve, we're with Jana Unadich, who is a shareholder with Moss & Burnett's Family Law Group. Jana, a super lawyer, and also we have a number of super lawyers practicing with you in our family law area, which is, I might add, very, very distinguished.
Yes, it is. I am very honored and very blessed to be able to practice with such an esteemed group of attorneys.
Right. I think at last count, we had four super lawyers and three rising stars.
That
among,
is correct.
That's all seven of our lawyers, isn't it?
That is. We have one that is fairly new to our practice, and I have no doubt that she will soon be a super lawyer as well.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. We were talking ahead of the break here about the different kinds of topics that we deal with or that you deal with in family law. And one of the issues that we got into offline was what's happening with the new health care reform law in terms of marital dissolution issues.
And that's an excellent question. And that's one that we are looking at to see how will it affect either of the parents' obligation to continue to maintain the children on a medical insurance plan that they have had, and what happens when that child emancipates and, you know, is either in college or even older, and what is the obligation going to be? I guess one practice tip is when we are regularly drafting our judgment and decrees, we want to include language that would state that the parent who's going to carry the health insurance is going to maintain it for so long as that child is eligible to be on the plan. And there are other practitioners who will draft that the parent is obligated for so long as they have a child support obligation. And that can make a very big difference in families if you've got children who are in college or even after that to be able to have that medical insurance in place.
I imagine we'll see some interesting debate upon that point with the government, too, as they're looking to have private parties pay for the cost of insurance with, after all, emancipated children being entitled to join the national health care system anytime they want to.
Yes, it will be interesting to see how this all plays out.
All right, then. And one of the areas that, of course, has just exploded in recent years and past decade in particular are the question of all of the interests out there around the issues of paternity and visitation and third-party custody. Tell us what's happening with those areas.
You know, there are a lot of people, when they look at family law, they look at a mother and a father trying to determine custody issues and parenting time issues, but it does expand beyond that. We have grandparents who can also bring an action for grandparent visitation or third-party visitation. Maybe you have an aunt or uncle who is particularly close to a child, and for whatever reason, maybe mom or dad have separated, and that family member wants to be able to ensure that they are going to continue to be able to see the child. And so that is an action that can be brought in family court to make sure that someone is going to be able to continue a relationship with a child. And then sometimes you have, you know, the sad fact that there are one or two parents who really are not able to take care of this child, and sometimes you have a third-party custody matter where maybe grandma or grandpa or another family member is stepping in and wanting to take custody of the child for a variety of reasons to make sure that that child is going to be brought up in a safe and healthy environment. And so the family court has to deal with those issues as well.
And in terms of paternity, we now have all of the DNA testing that's so prevalent. I think there are kits for DNA testing they can buy at the drugstore, and that's posing some challenges in terms of existing marriages as well as the traditional who's the father of this baby kind of issues.
Exactly. You're right. You can order DNA tests online. You can pick them up in a variety of places, which makes it more easy to be able to determine that. If paternity is being challenged, we still go through the process of the DNA testing through the courts to make sure that you have met the burden of proving that this particular person is the father of the child for the court to be able to then adjudicate paternity and then have the child have the rights that they would be entitled to under the law.
I understand there are situations now where inside of a marriage with children. It's been determined that, in fact, the biological father was not the husband in the marriage. And what's happening in those situations?
Well, it can go a couple of different ways. Sometimes you will have a family that they're divorcing, and the father, through DNA testing or other methods, is able to determine this child that I thought was mine really isn't mine. And so now you have the father who has basically raised the child, but now you have biological father who's over here. So there's essentially two parents. And sometimes the court will then have to go back, and mother will start a paternity action with the biological father to enforce child support rights and other rights, and then that person would again be able to also seek parenting time with the child. And in some cases, you know, we've had a few clients who have come in who have questioned paternity issues with the child, either if they're married or unmarried, and sometimes they've decided that I've acted as this child's father, I love this child loves me, I want to maintain this relationship, it's not important to me whether I'm the biological father or not, and they will actually not pursue testing, and they will just continue to raise the child.
It must be hard sometimes for you not to become emotionally involved with some of these challenging issues that you face really almost on a daily basis.
You know, it really can be, because you obviously, working so closely with clients, you do get to know them very well, and you do become very, you care very much what happens to this family, and you really want to make sure that the children and both the parents are going to be able to emerge from this process in a way that's going to benefit everybody, and that they're going to be able to go forward and be a healthy, happy family after the divorce is over, after this particular matter is going to be concluded. And so you do get vested in the outcome, and you certainly want to do everything you can to make sure that the client, the children, and everybody is going to be okay afterwards.
How often are the items in a decree revisited? Once the decree is out there and all the parties agree this is what we're going to do, how difficult is it to reopen custody or paternity after the fact, if you will?
For a custody matter, you can bring a motion to modify custody if there are certain factors that the court needs to look at, if the child's being endangered by their current surroundings. Another issue is if, you know, sometimes the parties either agree or the court's going to decide that maybe in this family the child is going to live primarily with mom. And for whatever reason, child now starts living with dad and has been living there consistently for, let's say, a period of several months, that child can be integrated into that family, and father then could bring a modification motion to say, well, the child's now integrated in my family and I'm seeking a change of custody based on those circumstances. And it does happen.
Well, and I was also wondering about, what about kids get to a certain age, a teenager, and the court ordered that you're to live with your mother, but they get tired of mom gets tired of child, and they decide to go live with dad. I mean, what say does the court have in that matter?
You know, that gets to be a very tricky minefield when you get into those areas. If you've got an older teenager, 16, 17, 18, the reality is the child is going to, as we put it, vote with their feet. And if they're 17 years old and they can drive, and even if maybe it's mom's night and they want to stay at dad's house, the reality is there's probably not a lot anybody can do about that. They're going to start making their own decisions. But for the most part, we try to make sure that both the children have a good relationship with both parents, and they spend as much time as they can with both parents, because that's really critical in that child's development and relationships going forward. And so the goal of the courts and the attorneys should be making sure that this child has a healthy, loving relationship with both parents, and that's what we encourage.
That's a great place to segue into talking about how the bench and the bar here in Minnesota are innovating ways to take the fight out of family law and to work in cooperative ways. And I know we don't have a lot of time left, but maybe just talk in this segment, but maybe just talk a little bit about some of the creative things that have been done in Minnesota. And I know our own Susan Rode and Ben Henschel have been very instrumental in instilling these kinds of proceedings here in Minnesota and also in Colorado.
Exactly. Both Ben and Susan have worked very cooperatively with the Hennepin County judges and with Ramsey County judges, and actually judges in Minnesota and even outstate. I know they've gone to Colorado and I think to other states to work what's called an early neutral evaluation process, where the courts are getting families into processes early to look at custody and parenting time issues and try to resolve the issues before emotions get too high and somebody wants a full-blown custody evaluation. So what they do is they have the parties and their attorneys sit down with two people who have gone through training. They're highly qualified, either a family law attorney or a child psychologist, to work with this family to see if we can reach some agreements and try to resolve those issues early on. Similarly, we have the financial early neutral evaluation, where a family will sit down with either an experienced family law attorney or a financial expert to work on how can we divide the assets fairly and equally. How can we look at issues of child support and spousal maintenance and budgets and try to get those issues resolved early on, too, to try to reduce litigation in divorce cases?
In that process, you mentioned early neutral evaluation. I take it that we bring in an expert to take a look at all aspects of the situation and work with the parties to try to hammer something out. And if they don't or aren't able to do that, do you also participate in what we use a lot in my area of the law, trial law, which is mediation?
Absolutely. Mediation is strongly encouraged by the courts and by the family law bar to help people to get in with a qualified neutral to help them understand the issues. And a lot of times a barrier to reaching an agreement on an issue is just because somebody's afraid of what does that mean if I say yes to this, or I don't really understand this issue, so I'm afraid to say yes to somebody. So if they can work with their attorney in a mediation process, a lot of times those fears can get put aside, that they can be assured that, yes, this is fair, this is you'll be okay, and it's okay to agree to some of these things, and that helps get people to a place where they can settle.
I imagine, too, that especially in an area so fraught with emotion and anger and other issues, that it's helpful for people to have a chance just to vent to a third party about all of the other side's fault, wrongdoing, misconduct, and why they're good people.
Exactly. And you know what? Sometimes all a person needs is just to be able to say it and to tell somebody. And once they can kind of get it out there and they feel that they've been heard and their issues have been addressed or their fears have been addressed, they can move forward and reach some agreements.
We have more on the way. Family Law 101. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jana Onidich is in studio. One segment to go. Don't forget, Minnesota Law on a Sunday this week. Typically, we come your way on Saturdays between noon and 1 o'clock. But when there's a football game on Saturday, we move over to Sunday. By the way, for this program and other programs, go online. You can hear podcasts, etc. Find more information. That's moss-barnett.com. Minnesota Law will return in a moment here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know a team of Moss and Barnett attorneys worked on the appeal of the case that served as the basis for the motion picture, North Country?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. The news you depend on from the WCCO news team is available right now at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back. Minnesota Law, Sunday edition, continues. Family Law 101. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jana Onidich in studio. Tom?
Jana, you work closely, I know, with Ed Weiner, who's been on our program a number of times and, of course, is one of the most prominent family law attorneys here in the Upper Midwest. He's been on to talk about myths from time to time, and one of the myths that he addressed when he was on our program was whether or not somebody thinking about getting a divorce should hire a male or a female attorney. What's your thought on that topic?
I think that the client should look for an attorney who they have a good rapport with, that they're going to work well with, and regardless of if that's a male or if it's a female, you know, that really is going to be immaterial. I know some people come in and they do ask the question, is it better if I have a female attorney? Is it better if I have a male attorney? And the reality is, no. You want to find somebody that you work well with who's going to be an effective advocate in your case. And that's really the most important criteria for somebody selecting an attorney.
But what do you say when they ask whether or not they ought to angle to get a woman judge or a male judge?
And again, I look at that and I say, you know what? I know there's sometimes can be the perception that, oh, if we have a female judge, she's going to be favorable to the wife. Or if we have a male judge, he's going to be favorable to the husband. No. The judges apply the law, and they are bound to apply the law to this family, and they are going to apply the law fairly, and they're going to make the best decision that they can for this family. And so whether you have a female judge or a male judge, again, really is immaterial to how your case is going to get resolved or decided.
I've got one. Mom always gets the kids.
And that is a very common myth or perception among people when they come in to talk to us. And especially a lot of fathers have a concern that, well, you know, she was home with the kids more than I was. Is she going to get custody? And today, the courts and the attorneys and the experts who are working with these families, again, the goal is let's reach a custody and a parenting time arrangement that's going to be the best for these kids, making sure that they have quality time with both parents and that they can benefit from spending time with both parents. And sometimes that does mean it's going to be an equal schedule, that mom and dad will have the same amount of time with the children. And sometimes it's different from that. But the goal is to make sure that the children benefit from good relationships and loving relationships with both their parents.
We talked about this earlier, but I think it's important enough to bear revisiting. True or false, in Minnesota, the assets acquired during a marriage are split right down the middle, 50-50.
And again, that one is false. There's a lot of factors that go into looking at how the marital assets will get divided. A lot of times they do get divided equally, but not always. And so your case may have some very specific facts or unusual circumstances that a court looking at that would say, well, you know what, I'm going to give slightly more to wife or slightly more to husband based on a variety of factors.
And does that same apply to assets that I might have received as a gift or an inheritance?
Exactly, because the court can look at a party's non-marital assets and look at the value there to determine how can I fairly divide the marital assets to make sure that both of these parties are going to have something moving forward.
All right, another myth, and that concerns the timing of starting a divorce. Does it matter that I'm the first one to file the lawsuit?
You know, it really doesn't. The court, whether you are the petitioner, meaning you're the person who filed the action, or you're the respondent, meaning you were the person who was served, the court is going to look at you the same. They really are not going, you don't really have an advantage by being the petitioner. It's merely a label the court uses to be able to distinguish between the two parties, but it isn't critical that you are the first person to file.
All right. Well, even if I'm not the first to file, then should I be the first to go out and hire the biggest, baddest junkyard dog in town to make sure I have that lawyer on my team?
And, you know, we have those clients that come in, too, to say, well, I think my wife or my husband's going to hire, you know, attorney X. You know, do I need to be worried? And if that, you know, what you want to, again, look for is an attorney who has experience, who is proficient in the law, who can effectively work with you and effectively work with opposing counsel to try to resolve your case. And sometimes that is a very high-powered, you know, very well-respected attorney, but you don't, for most clients, they shouldn't feel like they need to hire the big, bad, you know, hired gun to represent them in their case.
I was going to say, we certainly have a number of practitioners who are leading and very, very effective and assertive, but, you know, not screamers, not table bangers, which in my experience, at least in the civil litigation side, just means that the bill goes up for the client.
Exactly, because really, for this family, you also need to be mindful of what is this going to cost me? And so you want to be able to work effectively to get your divorce resolved fairly and to not needlessly incur attorney's fees.
All right. It's been great having you on, Jana. We'll have to have you back because I would say that most all of these topics we have just glanced over here or with this afternoon really could be the subject matter of a complete show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I would love to come back anytime.
All right, very good. It is Minnesota Law, Sunday edition next week. Employment Law 101, Tom.
Exactly. We'll have Marcy Frost back. She's been on the program a number of times and has always done a terrific job, and this will be a great overview for our listeners of this always popular and important topic.
And for more, go online, moss-barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830 WCCO.